So we were looking at Blue Cliff Record, case 88. And the pointer says, taking charge of the situation, he hits home and smashes to pieces the golden chains and the hidden barriers. He acts according to the imperative, obliterating all tracks and traces. Tell me, where can there be any confusion? Xuan Sha, teaching the community, said, the old adepts everywhere all speak of guiding and aiding living beings. Supposing they encountered three kinds of sick person, how would they guide them? With a blind person, they couldn't pick up the gavel or raise the whisk. Or they could pick up the gavel or raise the whisk, but he wouldn't see. With a deaf person, he wouldn't hear the point of words. With a mute person, if they had him speak, he wouldn't be able to speak. But how would they guide such people? If they couldn't guide these people, then the Buddha Dharma has no effect. Oh, we looked at that a little yesterday. In a way, it's a story of its time, and we may look at it slightly differently. Probably wouldn't use all those he's. We probably wouldn't talk of deaf, blind and mute people as a special category. But the real question remains, how do we take this teaching into every relationship, every interaction? There's a sense also that the use of blind and deaf persons is purely a teaching device, that it will take some kind of attentiveness and kind of selflessness and creativity to relate to a person that we're not accustomed to relating to. And can we find that kind of creativity? Can we go beyond ourselves into every relationship, however unusual or difficult it may be? There's a sense that everybody has a need of some kind, or a peculiarity or an eccentricity, even, doesn't really matter what it is. How do we relate? How do we relate to a person who's completely crazy? How do we relate to a person who's deeply hostile to everything we stand for? Person who simply doesn't like you, full stop. person who adores you. Each situation has its own kind of characteristic and reality. And our question in our life and in our practice is, how can I be utterly one with whoever I'm with? This kind of question is, or the teaching is set in the backdrop, against the backdrop of what we call the Bodhisattva vow. The vow of Mahayana Buddhism that, in Indian terms, I will not attain enlightenment until I can take every person with me. It's an exquisite fragrance in that. Of course, it's set against a particular Indian worldview of cycles of life and nirvana being going beyond all those cycles of existence. We wouldn't see it in quite that way, but the scent remains. How can I, in my practice, relate or be in this world so completely that nothing is left? Nothing is left outside. So this is the context of the question. So it's phrased in terms of how can I help, how can I save people, which is the traditional wording. How can I bring all beings with me in this on this road to enlightenment? And it sounds like a kind of super heavy job we've got. But in our practice, we just find that place where we are just relieved of our endless self-concern. And it's just me and the person in front of me. And then it's not heavy, as the song famously says. It's not heavy, it's not light, it's just you and me. My voice, your ears. The floor, the windmill. It's just very clear. It's also very concrete. It's not a sort of theoretical endeavor of any kind. Very concrete, very ordinary. There was a man recently here at Poplar Grove who had a stroke, and he couldn't communicate, couldn't speak at least. And one side of his body was lame. just loved sitting in the zendo, sat in the chair in the corner. And there was such a sense, I think, for both Margie and me that of being taught by somebody else, that although we think of the Bodhisattva vow and our path as perhaps stereotypically helping others, guiding others, that's the language we use, saving others, formally. There's a sense that what the practice holds for all of us is that somebody else is saving us. Someone else is deeply touching us. So with this man who had an interesting life, he was a German farmer in Angola in his youth, came here. And after his stroke, his life had been a struggle, a frustration of feeling the need to communicate and not being able to communicate. And suddenly, here, we tell him to be quiet. Okay, no talking. Okay. Suddenly, all that tension and frustration was just gone. We just sat and held hands. And of course, it's not just people that we're in relation to. It's each other, also the light on the floor in front of you, the sound of the voice, the feeling of your body. It's the way we do our work, it's the way we keep our room. All of that is part of this Bodhisattva way. And then it's not just a question of deaf or blind. They call them sicknesses in the story, but that's, I think, just the language of the time. In the Zen tradition, famously, they talk of other sicknesses, which are perhaps quite helpful in this conversation. I can't remember whose sicknesses they are. It's a famous Zen phrase, so-and-so's two sicknesses. The one sickness is looking for the donkey when you're riding on it. Okay. Very recognizable. Okay. And the other is when you're riding the donkey, not wanting to get off. So, in this practice of ours, we encounter these, what they call sicknesses, just things that we find that make us contract, that we pull back into ourselves, and our work is just to keep finding that place where we can get off the donkey and let it go by itself. And we keep doing that. And we keep this process of climbing on the donkey and climbing off it. Climbing on the donkey and climbing off it. It's a bit like, well, one manifestation of that is we come back to the breath and off we go again. Come back to the breath, off we go. What Charlotte famously calls our porridge mind. But the process is the same every time. Suddenly we find ourselves off the donkey and letting him graze in the felt. And then we find we're holding on for dear life all over again. And we're berating ourselves for that, which sort of glues us to the donkey's back. And just that willingness to keep going in this, to see where we get stuck and to allow for it to just open out into an intimate relationship with whatever we have, ourselves, each other, the floor, the windmill, the sky. And then whatever we experience is one life. Whoever we are with is one completeness, one family. And the sense of deeply belonging wherever we are appears by itself. As if it's our birthright. And it's never my doing. There's always a sense of intimacy and inclusiveness that we recognize instinctively. And we know it to be true. And then we just say, thank you very much. So thank you very much.